Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. I hope everybody's having a great day. So I went on early because we got a little... So we have to re-record something. Matthew Anderson and I are actually going to be redoing one of the perfect movies that we have here on the channel, and that is The Empire Strikes Back. So that is later on today. We're going to be recording that. So guys, come back. I'll put out a notification, you know, about, 15, 20 minutes, maybe an hour before. Don't forget to set your notifications, your reminders. And as it says on the bottom of the, stream, don't forget to hit the like and subscribe button, guys, because every time you do this, it gets out to the masses and more people see this. And that's what A, I'm trying to do, and B, I want everybody to get this great movie content. And speaking of great movie content, we've got a ton of stuff for you today. We've got trailers, we've got production announcements, we've got all this stuff. So I have a couple of announcements coming up at the end of the show, so stay with us and stay with me, and I will talk about that. So let's just jump right into it because I'm not going to waste any time. So this morning, so let me preface it by saying this. We had this movie that was supposed to be coming out in July. And so because of, delays or whatnot, they wanted to get it better tweaked, for lack of a better reason. They moved it to November. And I'm talking about the Marvels. So we actually got our very first look at the Marvels today. Guys, it looks good. It looks fun. It looks good. It looks like a blast. So, this comes from Deadline. The Marvel's first trailer, Captain Marvel's sequel, drops. Brie Larson says new film, quote, digs into complexities of Captain Marvel's character. Marvel Studios has dropped the trailer for The Marvels during Tuesday's edition of Good Morning America, giving fans a peek at the 33rd film in the MCU. The upcoming film is set to hit theaters November 10th, which sees Brie Larson reprise her role as Captain Marvel, aka Carol Danvers. She is joined by Monica Rambeau, who is introduced in the Disney Plus series WandaVision. Velma, if I mispronounced her name, who plays Kamala Khan and Ms. Marvels completes a trio. The trailer sets the scene for the trio coming together as a team for the first time under the direction of Samuel L. Jackson's Nick Fury. Talking to Good Morning America about reprising the role of Captain Marvel, Larson said the new film would explore, quote, some of the complexities of the character. The first one, let's just put this over here. Sorry about that. So the first one was the origin story of who she is. Now it's digging into some of the complexities, that there is much more to her than that. There are parts that are not so great about her. That we can see a hero as being a person that doesn't make every right decision all the time, she told the show. Nick Dukakis directs The Marvels, in which the sequel is the sequel to Captain Marvel. The film will directly follow the events of the post-credit scene from the Ms. Marvel series. Ahead of the trailer being released, Marvel Studios released an audio teaser under the banner Breaking, newly obtained audio from space. Various voices could be heard against sounds of interference and static. Someone sounds like Monica Rambeau is heard saying, hello, while Samuel L. Jackson, Nick Fury says, where's Captain Rambeau? Larson also talked about her two upcoming passion projects for Disney Plus, the short film Remembering, exploring the power of imagination, and the docuseries Growing Up, following young adults aged between 18 to 22 years old, coming of age and their experiences. I'm so lucky that I got to play pretend with my job, she told Good Morning America. The fact that I'm an actor came from me, from being a small child saying to my mom, I feel like sitting here on the couch talking about these projects is an honor in the inner child of me. I have a very vivid interior world, and something I've cultivated and is very special to me, said Larson. On the docuseries, Larson said she has decided to focus on the 18 to 22-year-old demographic due to her own experiences at that age. It started me from realizing that I had deep feelings of shame and this fear that I was unlovable and that there were parts of me, of myself, that I should never share or show, she explained. Okay, let's get right to it because, first of all, this looks amazing. So this is going to be huge. Let's call a spade a spade. And this is going to be, it looks fun. It looks like a blast. And I can't wait to see this. I really can't. So that being said, I think it's one of those things where I think this sequel is, so you got to understand something, okay? That Captain Marvel made one, the first one, okay, well, obviously, made $1.1 billion. And it actually had a $160 million budget. And it made $153 million opening weekend. And it grossed $1.1. This is one of those films for Marvel that was huge. I don't expect this to be that big, but I expect it to be in the $700 to $800 million range. This is just, we're continuing the story. Now, Miss, you got to understand, got to remember too, Miss Marvel was one of the most watched, okay, if not the most watched streaming show on Disney Plus when that originally came out. So we're now seeing a new hero come in. And this is all going to be building again. I can't wait. I can't wait. I think this is going to be really fun. I think in November, see, you have another Disney film coming out, but it's going to be up against some tough competition. So you're going to have Dune, okay? And then you're going to have, later on, you're going to have Wonka and everything else. So it's one of those things. So let's get to one of our viewers. He says, Guardians of the Galaxy will make close to $1 billion. I tend to agree with you, Kevin. And I think that this has a, I think this has a shot. Guardians has a shot to make close to $200 million opening weekend. And when you look at it, the fact that, Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness was, it made $187 million last year. And it was an average film. Average. And it almost made $1 billion worldwide. If that's average, what, and this is going to be the last one, and Gunn has said this is really emotional. If go back and watch the story that I did about a week ago and how he breaks it down and said it was a trilogy. It was a phenomenal interview that Empire did, and I did a story by it. The Marvels will make $1 billion. You really think so? I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be close. I think Captain Marvel was one of those films that everybody wanted to see, right? And they finally got it. And when it did, it exploded, right? $153 million opening weekend. It made $426 million domestic, and it made the rest overseas. So if I had to put a number on it today, okay, 5 months out, 6 months out, I'm saying around $850 million, which is phenomenal. And you got to understand something too. This budget is probably the same, if not more, than what the actual first film was. The first film had a $160 million budget. So we'll see. I think it's going to be interesting. Pixar's Elementor will do decent at 4 to 5. And that's the other thing too. So Pixar, so Elementor was that other film I was referring to. That's going to be interesting because they have two different films going up against each other. And don't forget, you're going to have a film like Wonka be out with Timothée Chalamet reprising his role. I mean, not reprising. He's going to be playing Willy Wonka. You've got Dune. You've got this. You've got a ton of good stuff. So I think this is really going to do well. I'm excited for this. I think that, I mean, we get a little glimpse in here to, you know, one of the shots here. Of course, this is when she's probably, if I had to guess, I have no inside knowledge. So my guess is this is when she's probably going to meet Ms. Marvel. You know, when she's like, okay, what is this? Somebody's a little obsessed. You know, Little Mermaid box office runs. Yeah, I could say, I mean, it's all going to, I'll say this much, Kevin. It's all going to depend on their opening weekend. If they can do well opening weekend, if this gets good word of mouth, I think it will do good numbers. I think that this has to, A, get good word of mouth, but B, more importantly, I think that it has to do well overseas. And so I think if it does well overseas, you're going to see it do $800 to $900 million. But yeah, I can't wait for this. I can't wait for this movie. This looks incredible. This looks like a blast, and I can't wait to see it. So what do you think, guys? Do you think that this is going to make $1 billion, like Kevin said? Do you think it's going to make 800, 900? Do you think that this is going to be as good, if not better, than Captain Marvel? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments. Okay, before we get going again, let's tap into Kevin's one last, or this is Alex. Thank you for joining us, Alex. Alex, I'm trying to be optimistic about the Marvels. However, the trailer looks like we're getting more of what we got from the last three MCU releases, which isn't a good thing. Well, you know, I think that it's always hard to make a sequel, though. I think that that's something to be said. You know, sequels are always more difficult to make. I mean, look, it can be done. It's just hard. And I think the fact that you had a Miss Marvel series to kind of introduce her, she can just come right into it. I think that's something to be said, too. I am optimistic about it. I will say one thing, too. I think that people want to see this. People want to see Brie Larson back. And don't forget, I mean, you know, we hadn't really seen her. We'd only seen her one other time. I mean, we saw her in Endgame, obviously, where she was phenomenal. And then we'd only seen her one other time. And that was at the end of Shang-Chi. So we haven't heard anything. So let's take a couple of comments. With that being said, I'm holding out hope that it'll be better. Yeah. I mean, always go into a movie, regardless of whether it looks like, with an open mind. And then reserve your judgment after. And you got to understand something too, Alex. This is only the very first trailer. So the very first trailer is supposed to get you interested in, just interested in it. So obviously you're an MCU fan. So the fact is, this wants to just give you a little touch, little breadcrumbs. When we get a second trailer, okay, probably in July or August, okay, then people will start to say, okay, this is what the story's about. With that being said, Indiana Jones, Dial of Destiny, it's going to do a lot of money, Kevin. I'm not going to lie to you. It's going to do a lot of money. A lot of money. And it has that perfect spot, too. And when we talk with Jeremy in about a month, we'll touch on this. But this has the possibility to win two weekends, okay? The first weekend on the 30th, and then the next weekend before Mission Impossible comes out. So, I don't know. I mean, it's the final one for Harrison Ford. Whenever you have a final film of, like, a franchise, it always does good numbers because it is the final one. So, I don't know. We'll have to see about that. But let's move on to the next story. And this comes from Variety as well. But this is going to be talking about something that's been... So let me preface by saying this. Fads are everywhere in Hollywood. Everywhere. Okay, you can go back to, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you had boxing movies and like Southpaw and Hands of Stone and Creed, and not even 15 years ago, but like 10 years ago. Most recently, we just had musical films, Bohemian Rhapsody, Rocket Man, Judy, Star is Born, even though that wasn't like a biopic, Elvis. So today, it's all about video game adaptations, right? So we've had The Last of Us, we've had Mario, we've had, you know, other things. That being said, it's a fad right now. This is a fad, and it's going to be probably later on down the road. But here's the interesting thing, okay? I say this with this caveat. Variety, and this is asking which video games should streamers adapt. Okay, so what they did, let's read the article and then we'll touch upon some of these. Universal, the Super Mario Brothers movie, Paramount's Dungeons and Dragons, Honor Among Thieves, HBO's The Last of Us, and Netflix's Arcane are just the start of a new wave of movies and television shows based on popular video games and tabletop gaming IP. From God of War and Warhammer 40,000, set up at Amazon Prime Video, to Twisted Metal for Peacock, everyone wants a piece of gaming IP in a battle to gain new subscribers and reduce churn. But instead of fighting for whatever is popular and hasn't already been adapted, new data provided by fan community platforms and entertainment company Fandom suggests what title streamers, including Netflix, Amazon, and HBO Max, should be focusing on based on the gaming fan bases and their respective subscribers. So, real quick, so this is what they get when they get your data, you know, when they say, well, what are you into, like sports or music or video games or movies? This is what they do, and then they'll ask you individualized questions. So it's called market research, and they'll get your age and your, you know, male, female, or whatever else, your income. So these insights are based on Fandom's first-party platform, cross-visitation data pulled from its proprietary data platform, FanDNA, and tracks Fandom's top 10 wikis for fans of each streaming platform. Per Fandom's findings, which are derived from behavioral data and Fandom's users versus a study among a sample asking about attitudes and self information. So here's what all of these were. Apple TV viewers way over index for God of War. There's a God of War series already in development for that. But for Amazon Prime, where it doesn't register in the top 10, streamers should consider StarCraft and or Half-Life adaptations. These are both decade-old franchises with huge followings, stronger than average narratives, and the opportunity for great visual effects. Dragon Age and Elder Scrolls could be sleeper hits for a streamer, similar to The Witcher and The Wheel of Time. Final Fantasy, Horizon Zero Dawn, Assassin's Creed, Fallout could be, quote, serious adaptations, end quote. The Rainbow Six video games are based on Tom Clancy novels, which have been long been a source for successful television film adaptations. Hunt for the Red October, Jack Ryan, Clear and Present Danger, Patriot Games. Freddy Fazbear from the Five Nights at Freddy's game series popped up for Hulu. This series is very popular with Gen Z, and is rumored Warner Media is working on a film adaptation already. Some of the IPs are already films of various degrees of success. Angry Birds, Doom, that was that horrible movie with The Rock, Resident Evil, and Mortal Kombat. We started thinking about how, right now, all of these streamers are starting to figure out what they can produce that's going to be unique and differentiated. Fandom CMO Stephanie Fried said, told Variety, there's a real focus on continuing existing franchises because there's that belief that you have to have a much bigger leg up. Super Mario just came out and did huge numbers, likely due to the ability to lean on an IP that has been part of the people's lives for a very long time. For a while, the way that this was happening was through comics like Marvel and DC, and through books like Harry Potter. And all of a sudden, gaming was the next place. There are so many games, different types and different types of games. And we're seeing all of these, all of one that has been developed into franchise and on screen onto other screens that have been successful. And yet, I feel like they've only tapped into the surface because comics and books have been always been a little more connected. But now gaming, it's going to be both ways, both developing from a gaming franchise into television, movies, and vice versa. While several of the game titles that show up in these findings have already been adapted for screen, many by the platforms other than the ones that they align with best in the study. Fandom data suggests, quote, it's important for studios to consider what's a good content fit for a specific platform streaming service, whether it's built from scratch, getting the rights to an existing content, or carving out a space to develop a different part of the franchise, end quote. And then see below for the fandom's data broken down by streamer. For example, Fandom found that visitors to Peacock wikis are 37, this is their term, 37 more times likely to engage with Angry Birds than any other fandom, 29 times more likely to engage with Sonic than any other users, and so on. So, lot to digest. Let's get, so real quick. So it, just for that one, okay, Angry Birds is 37 times more, Sonic is 20, Just Dance is 19, Mario is 14, EverQuest is 12, Pokemon 9, Fallout 8, Dragon Ball 8, Minecraft 7, and Elder Scrolls 6. Okay, let's talk about it. A lot of stuff here. This is the way to go right now. Plain and simple. This is the way to go. And I think that, you know, it's one of those things that you're going to see a lot more of these happen. I really, really think that this is just the tip. You know, somebody said it in the article. This is just the tip of the iceberg, guys. This is just the tip of the iceberg because they realize that there is so much money to be made in this stuff. So much. And if it's done right. And the thing is, it's because I'll be honest. I love Assassin's Creed. That movie with Michael Fassbender was horrible with Jeremy Irons. We don't talk about that because it was just a terrible. Anybody who's played and knows Assassin's Creed knows it's bloody, knows there's a story behind it, knows all of this stuff. He's trying to find his heritage. It just didn't work. Nonetheless, these could be remade if they're done right. And if these streamers, look, HBO Max laid down $100 million, okay? And The Last of Us got 8 million people to watch the last two episodes. The premiere episode of The Last of Us got over 5 million people, only second to The House of the Dragon, which we've got a story coming up later upon. But that's amazing. And there, as they said, there are so many games. I mean, you look at what Mario did, right? Mario just blew the doors off everybody for 5 days. $200 million for 5 days. And the thing is, the critics weren't too fond about it. It was 56% on Rotten Tomatoes for the critics, 95% for the fans. If it's done right, they can make a lot of money. Kevin says, Super Mario International box office total. Yeah. I tend to agree. I mean, so this is going to win this weekend, okay? And then, you know, probably it's probably going to win the rest of the month, to be absolutely honest with you, Kevin. And then what will end up happening is once Guardians comes out, it's just going to... But then by that time, it's either going to be on streaming or it's going to be out of everybody's public eye because everybody's looking forward to Guardians. I think that, you know... Mario's going to, you know, be interesting to see if they make a sequel. It really will. That being said, this is going to be, I think you're going to see a lot of these adaptations come out. It all depends on, number one, it depends on the streamer. Okay? It depends on the streamer. And it depends on what the IP is. For example, Halo was put on Peacock. It didn't work. from everybody that I've talked to and watched it, it didn't work at all. Now, they've renewed it, but I don't see it lasting. Now, you take it something like The Last of Us. See, this is where the demographics come into play, okay? So you take a look at something like The Last of Us, for example. Okay, it's a very... What Drunkman and Mazin did was amazing. And moreover than that, they realized what their demographic was. They realized it was a four-quadrant show, okay? You're talking about a show like The Walking Dead, which was a comic book, like video games, you know, 18 to 34, and they did a phenomenal job. So, you know, not to mention, let's talk about, you have movies out there. For example, Doom. People forget Dwayne The Rock Johnson did Doom 20, 25 years ago. I wouldn't be shocked to see them, whoever has the rights to it, remake that into a series. Okay? Assassin's Creed. I think that works better as a series. Okay? It's not a two-hour film because you have a lot more time. You know? I think that it could really, really do a lot of good things. And if you tell that, and that's one thing else that you got to understand too. People could only watch The Last of Us on HBO Max. When it's exclusive to that streamer and they say yes, they'll subscribe to it. And that's a fact, because they want to see it, whether they're curious about it or whether they love the game like myself, let's say The Last of Us or whatever it is. They love the game. Video game adaptations are here to stay, and you're probably going to see this for the next 5 to 7 years. Don't be shocked if you're going to see, you know, more television or video games for television streamers, and don't be shocked if you're going to see movies. And people are going to say, oh, we're tired of it. No, you're not. Otherwise, you wouldn't be going to the movies to see them or watching the streaming shows to see them. So it all depends on a couple things, like I said. Number one, it depends on the streamer. Number two, it depends on the IP, okay? And number three, it depends on what your demographic is for that IP, or not only for the IP, but the streamer. So, and that being said, do you think Disney Plus will win major Emmy? I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be, I mean, look, they've been nominated before. I mean, I don't know if they'll win an Emmy, but I would say this much, Kevin. I think, and I've said this before, I think The Last of Us has a real, real good shot of cleaning up the Emmys. No joke. No joke. Because here's the thing. It's going to production, Bella Ramsey, Pedro Pascal, okay, not only acting, but the behind the scenes, I think that's got a real good shot. I would love to see a Legend of Zelda series, although it would take a huge commitment, as it would be very expensive to make. But see, that's the thing, Alex, and I understand that. And by the way, that would be a very cool series to see. But when you have a streamer that put $100 million into The Last of Us and HBO Max, okay, $100 million. Every single one of those episodes cost between $10 to $15 million to produce because of production, because of they did it right, okay? If they put in $100 million, they could easily make that. They could make a gritty, maybe not a gritty, but a realistic Legend of Zelda. And it would be a great fantasy video game type of adaptation. I have no doubt in my mind they could do that. So, as I said, it's going to depend on the streamer, it's going to depend on the IP, and it's going to depend on a bunch of things. I think that video game adaptations are here to stay for good. Anyways, guys, what do you think? Are you getting tired of video game adaptations already? Which video game adaptations would you like to see on which streamers. Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so moving on. Speaking of streamers, tomorrow, HBO Max is going to be reintroducing and rebranding themselves. They are finally going to be getting rid of HBO Max. We don't know what it's going to be. But it's fascinating because we're not the only ones, the consumers, we're not the only ones that watch streamers. Of course, you know, everybody in Hollywood does. This is fascinating because Hollywood insiders are now talking about what streamers they like and they don't like. So this comes from Variety. And the headline reads, from glitchy HBO Max to overwhelming Amazon Prime videos, Hollywood insiders spill on their least favorite streaming interfaces. Television viewing has never offered consumers more agency. Though the streaming revolution has provided viewers with a dizzying array of television and movie choices, it has also led to a free-for-all in how the content is assessed across various devices. Every streaming service has added custom touches to its overall user interface. The tabs, the rewind button, and the fast-forward buttons, and a myriad of other functions that viewers are in need in order to queue up their shows. From the ability to speak into the Apple TV remote microphone instead of using a search bar, to the fateful day when Netflix allowed users to shut off the bombardment of homepage autoplay, the interaction that fans have with streaming services has come a long way. According to Hollywood insiders, who may have an even more critical eye than the average consumer about the screen time experience, more progress in the area of the user interface and user experience is needed as streaming takes root as television's dominant delivery platform. The next wave of this conversation will likely begin tomorrow, actually, on April 12th, as Warner Brothers Discovery raises the curtain on its plans for its combined HBO Max and Discovery streaming service. Boasting a huge library of television movies, HBO Max is one of the most used services on the market, but it has also sparked a lot of debate about its user experience. A query for HBO Max in the Twitter bar pulls up numerous expletive-riddled rants about glitchy streamers and faulty rewind buttons. Warner Brothers Discovery Chief Financial Officer Gunnar, I'm just going to call him Gunnar, admitted to a conference in January that the current service is, quote, subpar. He says, we're going to come out with a great product from a consumer experience perspective. And frankly, that's the biggest holdback for HBO Max right now, he said. The experience is not where it needs to be. So where does that experience need to be? Variety spoke with 40 industry insiders about what they like, they don't like, and downright hate about using the major streaming platforms. For Peter Gould, co-creator and executive producer of Better Call Saul, the key is to having an easy way to get all the industry pertinent information he seeks. I love it when you have quick access to trailers. I love it when you can watch the end credits and see who's in it and freeze frame it without having to jump to the next episode. Sometimes there's not a way to do that, and that's a pain, he says, adding, I wish there was a standardized, quick way to turn on and off subtitles. Every once in a while, you go back in a decoded line of dialogue. What we do in the shadows, writer and producer Paul Sims is unhappy with autoplay features. I like ones that don't make me mute my television, he says. Any streaming service that doesn't have pre-rolled ads yelling at me, I'm fine with. So he doesn't like the ad tiers either, huh? While Gould, Simmons, and other members of Hollywood are happy to discuss their features they like and dislike in the abstract, it's harder to get straight answers about which streamers they favor and which they hate, or at least which they try to find the lesser of many evils. They're all bad. They're all so terrible, says Stephen Schiff, a writer and executive producer on such series as FX's The Americans and Disney Plus's Andor. I don't want to say because I work for all of them, but they're all bad. Amber Ruffin, the multi-hyphenate behind Peacock's Andrew Ruffin show, is one of the few to Veracity endorse the digital architecture of her home team. I know this sounds like I'm a daddy's boy, but it's Peacock, she says, when asked about her favorite platform. Here's why. It tells you exactly where you left off on your favorite shows, but when you're scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, you don't know what to watch. Peacock has this alternative. It has a bunch of channels, and you can just watch as if you're scrolling through television. You have less of a chance, and it narrows it down. I love that. Variety surveyed sources from all parts of the industry, including the highs and lows, using Netflix, Hulu, HBO Max, Disney Plus, Paramount Plus, Amazon Prime Video, Discovery Plus, Apple TV Plus, and Peacock, strictly based on each of the platform's UI or user interface. Remember, this isn't a conversation about content itself. It's about the way consumers interact with it, with an app or a website during or after they watch the content. Much of the following is collected from insiders with current or previous work experience at the company in question. Users are baffled by the clunky experience provided by a major tech entity like Amazon through their platform, Prime Video. In fact, the biggest consensus in this survey was that Amazon had the worst UX of all. For the company that innovated one-click shopping, the interface still feels surprisingly. TJ Maxx is one source. There's a bit of everything, but it's too hard to find the good stuff. You know what really pisses me off, another source notes, about HBO Max and Peacock, the latter of which received the most mixed reviews of a survey, voted as the second easiest platform to use and the second hardest to use. When you click on a title from the home screen, it immediately starts playing where you left off. While the feature seems an attempt to get consumers to their content as quickly as possible, users don't like having that decision made for them. Sometimes I fall asleep watching television, the source says. So I want to see the episode menu first. That makes it so annoying to find. Netflix was the most widely regarded as having the best UI, with several comments about how intuitive and aesthetically pleasing the platform was. But the common complaint about the company that started the streaming revolution is that it can throw too much at you. I think it's very badly curated, said a viewer. Right now, in their 2022 Emmy nominees category, they have Sunset next to Maid. I get it. Sunset is a Netflix original that I'm sure that they want to show off. But if I'm looking for Emmy-nominated content, I'm probably looking somewhere more prestigious. For a brutally honest sampling of the industry's takes on the apps that steal the show, we are. Okay, let's talk about this, because there's a lot to digest here. Wow. So the fact is this. They consider, when these executives are actually watching this stuff, because they're watching their own content, right? And the thing is, so here's like Netflix's user interface, okay? So this is, you know, is the home play feature. As soon as, you know, that first screen comes up, it will automatically start to play. And that's what he doesn't like. I think, and I have a lot of these streamers, so I can really identify with some of them, okay? HBO Max is good. I haven't been on HBO Max in a while. I haven't been on any streaming services in a while. But when I was watching The Last of Us, it was very easy to get to and from where I needed to be. That being said, I think that the leader is always going to be Netflix, right? Even though you have HBO Max, even though you have Amazon Prime. And I find it kind of funny, though, you know, with the person saying, well, it's kind of TJ Maxx, even though they're the ones that developed this, right? Nonetheless, it's all a matter of, because the ease of the UI or the user interface is going to dictate whether you get on, okay, or not, get the streaming service or not. this is why exclusivity is so important. Like I was talking about, HBO Max is one of those things where you could only watch The Last of Us, right? But if you had to go through all of this other stuff, you know. So, look, streaming services are not bad. They're not great. They're not bad. I hope that with this whole rebranding of HBO Max, okay, and Alex says it's reportedly just going to be called Maxwell. We'll see. I mean, I think you might have said it, or somebody else that might have said HBO Plus, that which would be good. But yeah, Max is fine. But the thing is, how do I know what's Max? I mean, do you see my point? There has to be some sort of HBO in there, okay? But I do think if I were going to pick one, I would say HBO Max myself. That being said, it's all fascinating because these insiders are actually users themselves, so they can critique their own stuff. And I found it humorous that one of them said they're all bad. They're all bad. You can't work with it. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where if you can't work, I mean, imagine working at Netflix for a minute, or let's say HBO Max, and actually having them say they're all bad. That's pretty funny. Anyways, yeah. So I mean, the streamers I have HBO Max. Okay. I have Peacock. What else do I have? I think I have one other streaming service. I might have Hulu. I don't know. But I definitely do have those two. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't have any problem with it. I will agree with her on one thing. I do like the fact that you can just scroll down. And in Peacock, you can just watch the news, or even it's localized too. So you can go to Boston, for example, on WCB. You know, NBC, and watch the news there. Or you can watch, you know, the news and, you know, nightly news and whatever. So it's all interesting. The easier it is for people to navigate, more people will subscribe to the thing. And I think they're realizing that. What do you guys think about this? Do you guys think that, you know, first of all, which streaming services do you have? And do you think they're easy to navigate? If you could change any couple of things about the streaming service, what would you change about it? And how do you think HBO is really good? You know, HBO Max is, as it stands right now, how do you think they're going to do in the UI and everything else? Leave your thoughts down in the comments, and I'll get back to everybody. Okay. So our final story of the day, is about a story that is on HBO Max, and that is The House of the Dragon. It is reportedly going into production, and it is going to begin filming. And so this is a good thing, because it was one of the biggest shows for HBO on their platform, HBO Max on their platform. House of the Dragon locks in season 2 cast, production team as filming begins. Filming is underway for the second season of The House of the Dragon, HBO confirmed Tuesday. Based on George R.R. Martin's Fire and Blood, a spinoff set 200 years before the events of Game of Thrones, tells the story of House Targaryen. We are thrilled to be shooting again with members of the original family as well as news talents on both sides of the camera, series co-creator, executive producer and showrunner Ryan Condal said in a statement. All of your favorite characters will be conspiring at the council tables, marching with the armies, and riding dragons into battle soon enough. We can't wait to share what we have in store. To celebrate things, HBO shared a behind-the-scenes photograph at the Iron Throne at Leavenworth Studios in the United Kingdom. The main cast of season 2 includes Matt Smith, Olivia Cooke, Emma D'Arcy, Eva Best, Fabian Frankel, Ewan Mitchell, Tom Glenn Carney, and Ryan. Additional running cast includes Harry Collant, Bethany Antonia, Phoebe Campbell, Phyllis Sabin, Jeffrey Hall, and Matthew Needham. In addition to Condal, Martin serves as a co-creator and executive producer. Other EPs include Sarah Haas, EP as executive producer. Sarah Haas, Ann Taylor, and Miss... And Melissa Bernstein. And Condal is the sole showrunner after the other one left in August. HBO has given the following upcoming second season a shortened episode of 8 episodes. The rap previously convert. Individuals with knowledge of the matter said that the move is due to only the needs of the story being told and not to any other concerns. HBO and the HBO Max chief said he expects the second season, quote, to premiere sometime in 2024. They're just starting to put the plans together. And just like last time, there will be so many unknowns, he told Vulture in an interview in October. It's not to be coy or secretive, but you don't want to say when it's going to be on the date, so then you have to move it. Condal previously told The Wrap that House of the Dragon is a shorter story, all told, than Game of Thrones, and likely won't run as long as the flagship season series did. So the wait between seasons could be much longer. The story may wrap up in a few seasons. This particular story, the one that I'm telling now, The Dance of the Dragons, as it is an original series, it doesn't have the breadth of it, he said. Not to say it's any less interesting. It's a really great series. But I also think part of the series is knowing when to drop the curtain on it and call it an end. And I think, well, I'll get to that point in a minute. That said, Condal teased that there is a rich Targaryen history to be mined before and after the events of House of the Dragon that could be continued in another HBO series. But I've always said the show is called House of the Dragon. It's not called The Dance of the Dragons. And I think there is a very rich 300-year Targaryen dynasty to mine many stories out of. And I think the thing that I think is the most promising for the future for the fans of Westeros is that George has written some deeply complex history. That's 3 centuries long that begins with Arryon's conquest. Actually, it begins before that with the story of the Targaryens leaving old Valyria because of the dream of one little girl. There are so many stories to be mined out. There's a willing audience, there's plenty of Targaryen to come. Okay, a couple of things. Number one, fantastic that it's on the men about filming. I can't wait to see this. Number two, Game of Thrones could have very, very, very easily have just totally cut off after the 7th season. It didn't need the 8th season. Because that 8th season was horrible. Horrible. And anybody who is a Game of Thrones fan, and I've watched the whole thing, it's been a while, but I've watched it, they'll tell you that was the worst season by far. By far. That being said, I think that this is going to be better. The introduction to characters is always hard because, let's face it, you have to get to know the characters and everything else. By the end of the 1st season, you know what their motives are, whether it's power or money or fame or whatever it is. In this case, it's power. And the thing is, this 2nd season is going to dive deeper and deeper and deeper into this. And it's as good, you know, if it's as good as the 1st season, look out. You know, I can't wait to see this. The fact that it's a little shortened doesn't worry me at all, because that means they want to take it seriously and as good, make the very best possible episodes they can. And when you do that, you come out with good product. So I'm not worried about this at all. And don't forget, guys, let's call a spade for a minute. House of the Dragon, when it premiered, was the largest opening for any series on HBO Max. this is what they kicked it off with, you know? So there's something to be said about that. This is going to do huge numbers for the second one too. And the fact that they're able to put it on their platform, wow, look out. 2024, I mean, this is going to, if all the plans work out like they want, okay, they're going to probably have, okay, this come out in 2024, okay? And then you're going to have, hopefully, I don't know about this, speculation, it's 2023 now, Last of Us Part 2, or Last of Us Season 2. So you could have the Last of Us Season 2 come out in 2025. So there's a shot. They're going to be dominating this thing. Look, for the next 2 years, look, HBO has been dominating the cable market for the past 20 years. Okay. Whether it is something like House of the Dragon, but whether it is Game of Thrones, whether it is Succession, whether it is The Wire, whether it is The Sopranos, whatever it is, this is no different. They're just moving it all to streaming. They need to rebrand this, and they're going to tomorrow. I just hope it, you know, I just hope that it's the name is halfway decent. I'm very curious. Matter of fact, after the show, I might go on HBO Max just to see what kind of changes there are made. But they right now are in the spotlight for all the bad reasons. So, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see. So we got a couple of comments here. So let's, before we get going, let's get a couple of these comments and see what I have. So Alex says, I have HBO Max, Peacock, Apple TV, Hulu, Disney Plus, ESPN Plus. Oh, wow. So you have all of them. You have all of them. Nice. I had Paramount Plus. So we'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, I do have Disney Plus. I've got Peacock and I've got HBO Max. Those are the three that I have. I just need to save some money. Oh, so, yeah. So I know somebody that has like Amazon Prime and Netflix and everything else. So, I had a brief subscription to Apple TV. I just forgot to, renew it or, not renew it. I'm sorry. What am I trying to say? Cancel it. So I had it for an extra month. So, but yeah, I got rid of that one too. So Warner Brothers needs a comeback when they, Warner Brothers needs a comeback when coming to their films, television side, they've always been the powerhouse network with HBO. Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's all going to depend on what happens with James Gunn and DC and whatever happens, because the thing is that they right now, I mean, we have The Flash coming out, so that's going to be huge. And we're going to do a spoiler cast. I'm going to be doing a spoiler cast for The Flash here on the channel, along with all the other summer films. But The Flash is going to be the one that really is a litmus test for other things down the road. So, you know, I mean, there are so many questions about it. And this has been going on for so long. What's it, you know, going to be like? So we'll see. You're right about one thing though. HBO Max or HBO has been a powerhouse for 20 years. Whether it is The Sopranos, whether it is The Wire, Succession, Game of Thrones, whatever it is. So yeah, I tend to agree with you. So we'll see what happens though. I'm really interested. On that note though, so a couple of quick announcements before we get going for the day. Number one, come back and we will schedule it later on. Matthew Anderson and I are going to be sitting down and we're going to record, do the live stream for it. So if you guys don't see it, you'll be able to see it May 1st. The perfect movie for May is going to be Empire Strikes Back. And so that's going to be, so we're going to get that all taken care of. Number two, as it says on the screen, please like and subscribe if you already haven't. Like I said, it gets out to the, you know, the masses and whatnot. Number three, Patreon. go over to Patreon real quick. It'll take you 2 minutes. There's only two levels there. It's $5 and $10. For $5, you get an exclusive video, one exclusive video per month, and that's yours, okay? And that's going to be Mob Mondays. For $10 a month, you get two. You get Rewatch Wednesdays, and you get Mob Mondays. If you don't want to do that much, head on over to the YouTube channel. Just started memberships up. I think it's $2.99 a month. It's the price of a cup of coffee, guys. So, I mean, it's not that big. The other thing, too, is number four, and one of the last things for the day, is I am going to be doing a Mission Impossible rewatch. That is going to be starting June 2nd. But moreover, importantly, next week, okay, is going to mark the 5-year anniversary for Avengers Infinity War. So I'm going to be doing a video or a stream about the 5-year anniversary, what I remember about it, how many times I saw it, and we'll try to get somebody on to help out with that. And then, of course, we have Return of the Jedi. So that's turning 40. So I'll be doing a whole stream about Return of the Jedi as well. Not to mention the summer, guys. We've got a lot of stuff coming up in the summer. So stay tuned. Leave your thoughts down in the comments. I get back to everybody. And okay, that's it. That's all I got today. So do the three things you need to do. Be safe, be careful, and have a great rest of the day. I'm David Steele, and you have been watching Real Talks. Bye-bye, guys.